Here's your money briefing from Monday, December 16th. I'm J.R. Whalen at the Wall Street Journal in New York. UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson won last week's election on the promise of a quick exit from the European Union. A London-based asset strategist will explain why Brexit won't be completed as quickly as many people think it will, and how investors can capitalize on that. First, some money and market news you should know. It might be safe to go back in the water. Earlier this year, investors piled into so-called haven assets like gold, the Japanese yen, and dividend-paying stocks. They were seen as a way to hedge against worries over a wave of global issues, like fears of a slowdown in growth, an ongoing trade war with China, and uncertainty over Brexit. But as fears have waned over the past several weeks, the prices of these safe destinations have declined. The U.S. dollar and Japanese yen have drifted lower. Silver is off nearly 15% from its September peak, and utility stocks are among the S&P 500's worst-performing sectors. But investors don't feel they're fully out of the woods yet, at least when it comes to gold. Even though prices have fallen around $85 from September's six-year high, they've still registered a roughly 20% gain this year.
From Connecticut to California, from Mississippi to Minnesota, millions of American businesses are using Google tools to grow online. The Grow with Google initiative supports small businesses by providing free digital skills workshops and one-on-one coaching in all 50 states, helping businesses get online, connect with new customers, and work more productively. Learn more at google.com/grow. That's google.com/grow.
The timeline for the UK's exit from the European Union became more clear following last week's general elections, when Prime Minister Boris Johnson won a decisive victory, winning a majority of 80 seats in Parliament. But how could investors make money off of Brexit? And how much room does the British economy have to grow? Pictet Asset Management senior multi-asset strategist Richard Diaz joins us to discuss. So, Richard, before the UK actually exits the European Union, there are several steps that have to be taken that the markets will be watching very closely.
Well, yeah, I think there are two kind of important milestones that need to be taken. And I think that, so the first, just to be clear, is January 31st, which is the deadline that Boris set before the election. Obviously, the withdrawal agreement can now be passed, given the majority. And then they have a year to negotiate a trade deal with the EU. Obviously, that can be bumpy. There's some worries about, given the fact the majority is so strong for the Conservative Party, that Boris will opt for a hard Brexit. But I actually think that the opposite's true. I think that given the strength of the majority, I think that the more Europhile factions of the Conservative Party do not have to appease the ERG, the European Research Group. And I think we'll actually get a softer Brexit than I think many of Boris's critics would care to admit.
European markets and global markets had been a little wary of a hard Brexit, a rapid departure from the European Union. You're saying that the markets might be somewhat pleasantly surprised?
There's two things on this. Number one, I think we kind of figured that out in August when the pound bottomed. And I think we need to trust the markets somewhat. And they're telling us, they're signaling to us what I think is the collective wisdom. And that's that it wasn't going to be so bad after all. But also, I think something, another angle that I think people don't spend enough time thinking about is everyone thinks of Brexit as a UK problem. But I think Brexit as a European problem. And I think for US investors and Japanese investors, et cetera, I think they were unwilling to even touch European assets so long as Brexit was constantly in the headlines. And if you plot, for example, cable with euro area bank stocks, there's been a one-to-one correlation for the whole year, which is remarkable. You don't think of euro area banks as a Brexit issue, but remarkably, it's really tough to see it otherwise when you look at those two indexes together.
So investors might see some upside in European assets?
I think they already have. I think if you look at M&A, mergers and acquisitions, volumes are now at the highest they've been, and values are catching up. UK is very, very cheap relative to our scorecard, things like price to earnings, price to book, relative to its peers. It's got a really high dividend yield. The pound is still very cheap. We mark it as 50 to 20% undervalued. There's loads of pent-up demand. And, you know, the UK is not the rest of Europe. It's got a really liberal labor market. It's an English-speaking country. People respect the law. Remember, most of fixed income contracts all over the world are written in UK law or New York law, and that hasn't changed.
And U.S. corporations have a very strong exposure, of course, in the U.S., but they also do in the U.K. and across Europe. I would imagine this will put them at ease as well.
Again, I think this is going to put people at ease for not only the U.K., but also euro area assets. And that's something that we've been pushing to our clients for a long time. We think it's probably the best time ever for U.S. investors to think about investing in Europe. Again, the U.S. dollar is extremely expensive versus the euro and the pound. We think a lot of this political stuff in the UK has had a really adverse effect on investor appetite for euro area assets.
And this also would be a good opportunity for investors in the U.S. to pay very close attention to the UK economy and there being room to grow.
Everyone understands that, you know, the UK just narrowly avoided a technical recession. And that's, I think, largely to do with the uncertainty surrounding Brexit. But now that that's one hurdle is, I think, very much cleared. Another one I mentioned is January 31st, but investors need to look at is the pent-up demand in CapEx. CapEx has been flat since 2016 in real terms, which is frankly incredible. But there's 800,000 unfilled jobs. This is despite the fact that the economy has been very sluggish. Wage growth is very strong at 3.5% nominal terms, and inflation is falling and will continue to fall given the strength of the pound. So real wages will be up, and so will spending. We look at the housing market, the RIC survey, the Royal Institute of Chartered Surveyors is improving virtually everywhere. And we know that consumer confidence in the UK is tied to real housing prices. And so there's actually a lot of good coming this way. If the negotiations do well, I think UK is poised to outperform.
Wow, 800,000 unfilled jobs. In what areas are those jobs open?
So obviously the UK is dominated by the service industry. So there's about out of those 800, 720,000 of those are unfilled service sector jobs. But what's also remarkable is there's still 50-odd thousand manufacturing jobs, and that's for an economy that's had its manufacturing sector crushed.
Is this a problem throughout Europe also?
I think this is a problem throughout the world. Whether you look at Singapore, Hong Kong, you look at Germany, Austria, Netherlands, I look at UK, virtually every single one of those countries has enormous job vacancies. This is across industry, maybe not so much in the auto sector in Germany. Obviously, there's some issues there. But across the world, there's severe job shortages, worker shortage. And I think that that's going to support wage growth for the next little while, regardless of what happens to the economy.
In a broad sense, how would investors create some exposure to the UK economy?
So that's a really good question. I think a lot of people spend too much time looking at the sort of the headline indices. And I would recommend sort of avoiding the FTSE 100, which is largely financial institutions, commodities, and companies that are geared to sort of external growth and would actually do worse in a rising pound environment. And I would suggest that investors focus on the FTSE 250, which is much more domestically oriented stocks, much more focused on housing, retailing, and it's actually already started to decouple from the FTSE 100. If you look back at that chart, it's actually 2 years of kind of lockstep performance. And since they called the election, the FTSE 250 is actually decoupled. I think there's plenty more to go on that.
All right. That's Richard Diaz, senior multi-asset strategist at Pictet Asset Management, joining us from London. Richard, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you very much.
And that's your Money Briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen in New York for The Wall Street Journal.